You're listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Glad to have you along. I know you've been to the Ballard Locks, the way boats get between Puget Sound and Seattle's lakes. The Ballard Locks are an engineering marvel. It's a big tourist attraction. The official name, do you know it? The Hiram M. Chittenden Locks, named after the Army Corps engineer who laid the groundwork in 1911. But Chittenden's vision for the future actually came at the expense of a people he considered inferior, Native Americans. Reporter David Lewis with Seattle Weekly has written about the complicated history of Hiram M. Chittenden.
I was at the downtown library, and I saw that book you wrote, War or Peace, and the name Hiram Chittenden on it. And I mean, I'm from Ballard, so I know the name Hiram Chittenden. You know, you see it on the locks and everything. And then I was checking it, and it's like this crazy book from right before World War I about how the time for war is over. All of the barbarian peoples of the world have been subjugated. We've beat the Indians. We're expanding into the tropics. We don't need wars anymore. We can get rid of that and create like a kind of peace largely based on eugenics, where the races don't mix anymore. No one who is not white is allowed in the United States anymore. And it was a very bizarre take on peace that I'd never run across before, and I wanted to do something about that.
First, will you tell us about how Hiram Chittenden got to be involved with the Ballard Locks?
Well, yeah, he was in the Army Corps of Engineers, which is a half-civilian, half-military branch. And so he got sent to Seattle as the district engineer. And there have been for a while, they've been wanting to build a way to connect Lake Union to Lake Washington to the Puget Sound. And so he was brought in to build that.
Remind us how important the Ballard Locks were to growing Seattle.
Let's put it this way. When at the locks opening ceremony, a reporter, when he's looking at the huge crowds who came to see the locks open, he said, from now on, Seattle will be a city that will eventually hold 1 million people. It was going to bring in shipping. It was going to bring in the military. One thing about shrinking Lake Washington was it increased the land that was not underwater so you could build on it more. So it really did make Seattle the major city of the Northwest.
Now, the Ballard Locks were mostly built after Hiram Chittenden retired, but he set them into motion?
Yeah, he laid out the plan. He said where they were going to be. He said they're going to have a fish ladder. Most of it was his idea.
And to do that, he drained a river that was vitally important to the, as they were called, Indians nearby. Tell us the story.
Well, he drained what was called the Black River. It was, for Duwamish natives, the Black River was like the river. A lot of people say the true Duwamish were the ones who lived on the Black River. That's like where Chief Seattle's mother was born. It was a very important river, huge for the salmon runs.
And that ran where?
Well, it ran from Lake Washington through Renton. I think there's a Safeway built over it now, but it was a very important river. The big thing is the salmon. There was a great description from the 50s of some of the last natives still living who used to live on the river, and they're describing the day it was finally drained, and it's just the salmon were in tiny little like puddles of mud, and they were all gasping for water. They were all dying, and the white people were just showing up and cramming all the salmon they could into sacks and laughing, and to them it was a big joke. Bear in mind, not only did the natives eat the salmon, a lot of natives made their money selling salmon, too. Like, you would go to downtown Seattle, and there would be Duwamish on the street, 10 cents for a whole salmon. So it also ruined the way they made money. It ruined what they ate. It destroyed the Duwamish.
And you drew some parallels with the Standing Rock Reservation protest. There was also a spiritual component of the Black River to the Indians.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was huge spiritually. It was home to a river goddess named Weeping Mother, who, when the river would flood, she was seen as what caused the flood of the river. There was, in Salish mythology, a man or a spirit in the shape of a man who he lived beneath the river in a hole. And you would swim beneath the river to consult with him for wealth, powers, and whatnot. And most interestingly, it was on the banks of the Duwamish River. They had this mound. It was called the Mound of the Earth Beings. There were these primordial dwarves who lived in this mound. And they were there even before the creation of time. So it was like the most ancient part of the Salish religion was also wiped out by the removal of the Black River.
Did the native people protest the building of the locks and the draining of their river?
I'd say it's unlikely how much they knew about it till it was already going on, because it's not like they would have been consulted at all.
Why didn't anybody tell the Indians what was about to happen to the Black River?
Well, for all I know, they did tell them. It's not really written down anywhere. But at the time, Indians were seen as so much a part of the past that it was seen as no matter what, they were going to die off anyway. So they weren't really taken into large decision making at all because it was seen as no matter what you did, they'd die. And I think, especially with Chittenden, because his pen name he wrote under sometimes was Eye to the Future, he was just looking ahead and he thought, yeah, Indians are the past.
Is it safe to say that Army Corps engineer Hiram Chittenden would not have sided with the protesters at Standing Rock?
Oh, no, not at all. If Chittenden was on top of that, that pipeline would have been in last summer. But he'd be stunned that there's still natives left to be protesting in the first place.
Why do you say that?
Well, he thought they'd all be dead now. He wrote a poem about it. He wrote a poem where it's the last red man is saying farewell from the shore. In his book on the fur trade, he even toys with the idea of not even a reservation, but like a national park for Indians where they will maintain their traditional lifestyle without any contact from the outside world. But he even says that'd be impossible, but he says he likes the idea.
I've been talking with Seattle Weekly reporter David Lewis, who's written about the history of the Hiram M. Chittenden locks, the Ballard locks. After learning all this about Chittenden, what surprised you the most?
Definitely the link between a lot of his eugenics beliefs and conservation movements. He has a bridge named after him at Yellowstone, too. He's very big into national parks. It's just interesting how that changes, because right now, conservation is seen as very left-wing, very left-leaning. But in his time, it had a huge connection to what would be considered today like a right-wing, white supremacy.
What's that connection?
I think it might have something to do with the idea of the Anglo-Saxon elite has to take care of the entire world and like it's the Anglo-Saxon's job to control everything. Teddy Roosevelt was very, very big into conservation. Even Hitler passed a ton of forestry laws.
So, David, you delved into history. You found out about the history of the locks and the native people who suffered from its building and the man who they're named for. And what do you take away from what you've learned?
We need way more Native history education in schools. It is so bad. In one of my articles, I even tried to come up with 10 famous Native Americans born since 1900. I've even consulted with people who have like majored in American Indian history, and I think we got 5. So there really is not much interest in modern Native Americans.
Why do you think high school education in the Northwest is so lame when it comes to the history of Native people?
Well, I'd say...
And the present day of Native people.
Since Seattle was founded, every single generation has been more and more immigrants coming in. So no one's really ever been that interested in Seattle's past, ever. So because of that, we do not have a very strong history background. We have a great Native writer named Vi Hilbert. She's dead now, but she was the very last woman to speak Lushootseed as a Native language. And both her parents were shamans, and she wrote about Northwest mythology excellently. But, I mean, to find her books, you have to go into, like, the UW archives or the downtown library. I mean, the stuff does not get out there.
What's one change you'd like to see? Would it be from local schools or what?
Yeah, I would like to see local schools. A movie would be nice if there was, like, a movie about... Oh, you know what? Chief Lesh-Eye would make a good movie. Our own... Native resistance leader in the Northwest. I could see that.
Tell us about Chief Lesh-Eye.
Actually, this is also Army Corps of Engineers related. Governor Stevens, Washington State's first governor, he was in the Army Corps of Engineers. And he showed up in the Northwest like a whole generation before Chittenden. And he tried to put all the natives onto reservations that he knew wouldn't be able to support them at all and the plans of just killing them all off. And Chief Lesh-Eye stood up to that, fought a horrible war all throughout the winter. It didn't end well, but because he fought, they actually did expand the size of the reservations, which they wouldn't have unless he really showed Governor Stevens that the natives weren't as docile as he thought they were.
Chief Lesh-Eye may be coming to a theater near you.
The Chief Lesh-Eye movie. Yeah, let's see it.
Reporter David Lewis wrote in Seattle Weekly about Hiram Chittenden and the Ballard Locks. The headline was, "In Seattle's Past, a Harbinger of Standing Rock." Excellent piece, and we're tweeting out a link to it right now, at KUOW.